This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the worst ever!
Puts up the 10, puts it up the right sideline!
Yeah, he's got to go, he's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS champion.
Hello and welcome to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, college editor here at Dave Campbell's Texas Football, Ishmael Johnson, sitting here on the other line in Austin, Texas. Beautiful ATX is Mike Craven. Mike, what's up, man?
Doing pretty good. Good weather. Beautiful ATX for the next couple of days. And then I'm sure like you guys about to get weird here in a couple of days weather-wise and mid-March for spring break.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to get very, very weird. I mean, I was in San Antonio for state basketball and it was 90 degrees. And then I drive up back to Dallas and it was like a low of 50. And I was like, what? Like, what is happening
state.
Right now?
It's a big state.
It's a big state. Of course, as usual, with us is everyone's favorite Mal Pal, Mallory Hartley. Mallory, hi.
Hi. I finished filling out both my men's and women's NCAA brackets today. So feeling nice. Pretty optimistic. Feeling like I got two brackets, so for the men's, I have Alabama, and then for the women's, I have South Carolina. So two SEC programs. Not that big a fan of that, but
I was about to say I think I have both of those. I think I have both of those in mind too.
yeah, they're both hard, man. It's hard. It's going to be tough, especially when it gets to the Final Four.
This is going to be a year where I wouldn't be surprised that no number one, at least on the men's side, number one. I don't feel too confident. I've been jaded about Texas this year, and I have them making my Final Four. So that just shows how crazy this year's been.
So
I needed my soul for Marquette to play Texas just so we can get a Shaka Smart Texas Longhorns in the championship game situation.
If Texas fans have to go through A&M and their former head coach and backed in the same tournament, they might lose their minds.
That would be wild.
That'd be pretty funny. With that being said, you probably realize it's March. It's basketball season right now. So there's not really much happening in football. It's still kind of in that limbo area of some programs are in the middle of spring, some programs taking a little break from spring for spring break, things like that. And so we just figured we should talk a little bit about because spring storylines haven't really come out yet. Texas is really the only one after Sark mentioned the quarterback battle. And so we kind of figured let's use this episode to kind of talk about the spring storylines and kind of some programs that we kind of have some questions about heading into spring. We don't have an interview for this week. And so we're just going to jump right into it. So at least for me personally, I'm going to start with Baylor. And by the way, we're sticking with the Big 12 in this episode. I'm going to start with Baylor because this is a program seemingly, I don't want to say at a crossroads. That kind of feels a little too dire, I guess. But they are in a situation where they're in year three, four of Dave Aranda. Yeah, of Dave Aranda. So they've kind of lost he's working on it. Excuse, right? They've kind of lost that whole identity or that whole reasoning for maybe why things are slipping up, why things aren't as good. The thing that he had in year one, right? He's fixing things. Things are changing. But they're also not quite on the trajectory that we would expect in terms of them being a Big 12 contender, at least this year. And so, Craven, this is where I kind of want to get off on this discussion. What are your expectations now here in March for Baylor, a team that underperformed last year, had kind of glaring holes, didn't really maybe fill those holes in ways we expected, maybe via the transfer portal or whatever? You know, what are your thoughts, overall thoughts on Baylor heading into spring, and what are you kind of looking to hear from camp around there?
I don't think Crossroads is an overstatement, honestly. I think that could be an easy description of where Baylor is at, because they've had such big highs and such big lows under Aranda. You know, they win two games in year one in 2020. They go 6-7 last year, and then sandwiched in between that is a 12-win season, the best season in program history, a Big 12 championship, a Sugar Bowl win over Ole Miss. And so is Baylor more 2021, or is Baylor more 2022, 2020? I have no idea. I think the argument could be made both ways, right? Like, Dave Aranda won the Big 12 with a roster mostly put together by Matt Rhule and his staff. At the same time, that roster reached its pinnacle. It exceeded its expectations under Dave Aranda and his staff. And so I don't think the question is whether Dave Aranda can coach. The question is, can Dave Aranda get this Baylor team to win as presently constructed? And when you look at what they brought in, they didn't bring in a ton of new guys, right? Like, it's going to be probably the same quarterback, mostly the same weapons on the outside. The offensive line will go through some changes. But it's not like SMU, right, where they bring in 17 transfers and they're getting half their new starters from the portal. It's most of the same guys who were either starting last year or playing in reserve roles that are now going to step in for guys. I see them more as the 6-7-8 win team than the 10-11-12 win team. And is that good enough at Baylor? They've had three different coaches go to Big 12 championships over the last decade plus. I don't know if they're okay with being a 500 program, and that's about what they've been outside of that one big year. And so I think it is kind of a crossroads year for Dave Aranda, where we finally get to know what type of program are they. Are they more of the mountaintop, or are they more of the valley, or are they right dead in the middle?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm looking forward to is, obviously, we can talk about the quarterback situation, right? Blake Shapen, they bring in Sawyer Robertson to hopefully push him or maybe even beat him out this spring. We'll see. And from Mississippi State. But the thing that I'd be really curious to see is how much that offensive line played into that championship year, right? Because they brought in, they were still solid last year, but in that Big 12 title winning team was dominant, right? The running game was dominant, and that pass protection was dominant. And I think that's what helped Blake Shapen a lot, was him not having to kind of make on the fly decisions. The offense was able to kind of work as it was. And of course, we know Jeff Grimes and Eric Mateos, the offensive line coach, how in tandem they worked. You know, they bring in the Barringtons from BYU, which I think might have been their two of their biggest acquisitions this offseason. And I wonder just how much having a better offensive line that's maybe more approaching that 2021 level could just level out everything else, right? Does Richard Reese take a step forward just from having a better line? Does Blake Shapen, or if it's Sawyer Robertson, do they make the offense better just from having a better offensive line, right? We can talk about maybe the lack of weapons or the need to find weapons on the outside, but how much of that is just hindered by having that barrier up front? You know, that was kind of the thing last year, was the running game wasn't as dominant, obviously, when you don't have a Gary Bohannon, when you lose two running backs, but they weren't as dominant up front until they kind of caught on late in the year. Of course, Richard Reese helps with that, but I wonder how much that kind of plays into it. And I would expect both Barringtons to kind of make an impact really early. We'll obviously see how they look in the spring, things like that. But yeah, to me, that's kind of where I'm at. Cause I feel like quarterback is what it is. They either have Blake Shapen or they're starting Sawyer Robertson. And it's like, that's kind of it, right? There's no magic pill. I don't know if Blake Shapen takes a step forward or if he is who he was last year. So I'm not as hinging on that this spring.
I honestly think the offensive line is going to take a step back this year. I don't know. I mean, for me on the offensive line, that's my biggest question mark on the offense. I mean, we can talk about Blake Shapen. But I don't know how you get better when you lose Connor Galvin, Jacob Gall, Grant That's Miller, Khalil Keith. All of those guys came back from 2021. They had some running back injuries. Tate McWilliams, you know, was injured early, and I don't think Richard Reese kind of was ready. It's hard as a young kid like that to be ready week two, week three. Mm-hmm. By the time he was, they were pretty good running the football. They just got to get more consistent passing the ball. Like, they're not going to get back. I think that 2021 season took a lot of Big 12 defensive coordinators by surprise. They weren't a wide zone rushing team in Dave Aranda's first year. They were in year two. They had a perfect running back for that, and Abram Smith. And it was just a new scheme that I think it took a year for a lot of coordinators to kind of figure out. They did a little bit better last year, and then they did not have the downfield passing attack to get guys out of the box. Most of their best wide receivers were slot guys that were underneath routes. That, you know, it wasn't a vertical passing game. So for that running game to get better, I think they're going to have to figure out how to get downfield, how to get safeties out of the box. But I don't know if they can do that with Blake Shapen. I think that's the biggest conversation around Baylor is what is Blake Shapen in year three? I mean, I think a lot when you saw him in glimpses as a freshman in 2021, you know, at the end of the year when Bohannon went down, I was like, man, that passing game is going to take a step forward under Shapen. And I think he's got the talent to do that, but he's been inconsistent. He hasn't always made the best decisions, but maybe another full offseason with Jeff Grimes helps that.
Yeah. Let's take that quarterback situation and kind of ride into the next team. I guess the next two teams, I don't know. They kind of all have quarterback situations. But TCU, at least, less of a situation. We know who's going into it, right? We know Chandler Morris for them was named the starter last year. Obviously gets hurt against Colorado. Max Duggan comes in, lights the world on fire, becomes who, no, I don't think anybody here thought he could become, and now has a chance to get drafted. So Chandler Morris, presumed starter for TCU, he theoretically heads into spring. You know, what he did flash a lot in his first snaps before in Gary Patterson's last year, right, I should say. He flashed something, right? People were like, oh, this is interesting. He has a little bit of an arm. He can run a little bit. He's not maybe the downhill runner that Max Duggan is, but he can scramble a little bit. There's a little bit of a gamer mentality to him. What do you kind of, I don't know, what do you expect to see from Chandler Morris? Obviously he loses his offensive coordinator, so it's a little bit of a, we'll see how different that looks. But, you know, what do you kind of expect to see from Chandler Morris, who for all of his potential flashed in that one, you know, the couple of times he played in 2021, it was still, you know, it was still kind of, there was still a lot to work on there. But then again, this is a guy who we mentioned beat out Max Duggan for the starting job, technically heading to last year.
It's going to be an interesting thing watching TCU this year. I think they're one of the more fascinating program and programs in terms of what 2023 was going to be, because they exceeded expectations so much in 2022. What are those expectations this year? I think even if Chandler Morris has a higher ceiling and is a quote unquote better quarterback than Max Duggan, they can still be a worse team because they lost Quentin Johnston. They lose Tate Barber. They lose Darius Davis. They lose their best interior offensive linemen, their best running backs, et cetera, et cetera. And so for me, this is less about what Chandler Morris is compared to Max Duggan as much as it is, is like, what are the weapons around him? How do they retool that offensive line? And what does the offense look like under Kendall Briles and a new offensive coordinator? In a lot of ways, the new starting quarterback is like the most sure thing on the roster, because at least he like won a spot and has been around and knows the players on the team and et cetera, et cetera. But there are so many question marks surrounding him on the offensive side of the ball and on the defensive side of the ball, that it's going to be an interesting year for TCU. It's like, are they going to do the Baylor thing, right? Where they go from winning 12 games, 13 games, right? Or, and then back to six, or do they kind of find a better dropping point to 8 or 9, but it feels 10 wins or more. It almost feels like impossible looking at this roster, unless every single one of those new transfers just completely hits.
Well, let's stay on that, you know, that transfer, because that's kind of where they're going to have to fill those holes left by Kendra Miller and Quinn Johnson. You mentioned, you know, who do you expect to kind of make the biggest impact if you had to name one of these transfers? Now, to refresh some people's memories, of course, they pick up JoJo Earl, you know, hometown kid there. They pick up Tommy Brockermeyer from Alabama on the offensive line. John Paul Richardson from Oklahoma State. So like, they've brought in some pretty A-list, at least in terms of like on paper skill set, A-list guys. Obviously JoJo Earl, Tommy Brockermeyer didn't have the careers they wanted at Alabama, but these are still guys that you would have thought like, yeah, oh, if TCU got these guys out of high school, it would have been a coup for them, right? So who, you know, is there anybody that you're kind of expecting to kind of come in and make that impact, maybe not exactly being a Quentin Johnston, but maybe somebody you would position to be in that mold or be maybe shoulder the load of the offense a little bit more?
It needs to be JoJo Earl. You know, he has, you know, the biggest upside of that group. He can be a playmaker. He can do what Darius Davis, Tay Barber did last year, not only as a wide receiver, but in the return game. And that air raid offense that Briles runs, that, you know, even, you know, Garrett Riley ran, it really uses those short passing stuff. You know, a lot of jet screens, a lot of jet sweeps, a lot of screens out wide, a lot of quick hitches, a lot of crossing routes over the middle mesh and things of that nature. And then it uses stuff out of the slot to get you deep and get you on a safety and isolate you that way. I think JoJo Earl has the perfect skill set to do that. I mean, he's like a little Jalen Waddle, you know, like he was that as a recruit coming out of Aledo. He has that type of like next level speed that changes football in the modern age. So I think it needs to be him. John Paul Richardson's another one that needs to come in and kind of be a bigger bodied guy on the outside that can, you know, move the chains, can score some touchdowns for you. But they're going to need a lot of those guys to come in and do something. They're bringing in 9 transfers. I know they like some of the young guys that they brought in last year that didn't get as much playing time. So maybe some redshirt freshmen become those instant impact guys from the roster that we didn't see last year. But another one to watch on the offensive side of the ball, maybe Trey Sanders. I don't know who the number one running back is for TCU. Maybe it's going to be by committee. But I think we saw last year the advantage of having a dude you can rely on. And when you lose Kendre Miller, you're going to have to replace that. Because as good as Max Duggan was, he didn't have to be everything offensively. He had a really good running game to balance that out and keep defenses honest. TCU is going to have to figure out that room as well to take that pressure off of Chandler.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. The one thing that I'm curious about is, because Sonny Dykes obviously he's a smart coach and he knows kind of where his team lacked at times last year. And I wonder if by committee, the passing game's a little better, because, you know, you lose a Quentin Johnston. You can't replace that with regardless of how gifted JoJo Earl is, he's not going to come in and replace an NFL talent right away. But there were times where Darius Davis and Tay Barber kind of lacked in terms of being that next guy up, right? A lot of the offense did rely on Kendre Miller to kind of do something, Max Duggan to kind of do something, Quentin Johnston eventually. I think the perfect example is that Michigan game where they hit early and they have Quentin Johnston, or they get punched in the mouth early, but then they hit a couple big plays here and there, Quentin Johnston, Kendre Miller, but they're not exactly like sustaining drives. They're not exactly like, you know, going man for man right up against them and then like really, really bashing their head in. They're able to, on defense especially, they're able to punch Michigan back in their face. But at times this year, you kind of saw it in the way they won games, where it was like, well, yeah, they didn't exactly have the offense consistently down after down to play this perfect game and control a game wire to wire. And I wonder if Sonny Dykes kind of sees this potentially as their chance to do that, right? With a Trey Sanders maybe, and having a guy, maybe 3 or 4 guys in the backfield, maybe 2 to 3 options on the outside, maybe more consistently. That's what I'm a little curious about. And then obviously the next step on defense is becoming kind of just an overall better defense. I think Gillespie did a good job with a defense that was really bad 2 years ago, made them really respectable. Obviously against Michigan, they had their best game of the year. And so I wonder, that's my thing, is like, we've seen this team have to come back from so many situations. Well, what are the things to kind of fix to where you don't have to, you know, you can control a game right away, right? You can come out on your first, second, third drive and establish a tone, establish a tempo. And I'm wondering if that's something we maybe see them shift more to this year, as opposed to the team that, you know, has to rely on these huge plays from huge NFL playmakers to kind of keep themselves in games.
Yeah, I think they're going to take a step back offensively. You know, they average 39 points a game last year with all those people that we mentioned losing. You know, that's going to just naturally happen. You can't do that every single year. You know, if you're not recruiting 5-star talent that's just waiting in the wings or whatever, they don't have another Quentin Johnston. They don't have another Steve Avila, right? They don't have another Kendre Miller. They're not going to be able to do that, but they gave up 29 points a game last year. And what we saw against Georgia, what we saw against Michigan in that third quarter and the fourth quarter, they could give up points, right? And they gave up points in a lot of games. They played well against teams like Texas and stuff, but you know, they did give up a decent amount of points against good competition. If that defense can get better by a touchdown, then that evens out that offense maybe getting worse by a touchdown. And then they're just going to have to win close games. And they were able to do that last year. They weren't, you know, and we talk about this a lot. You can't count on those, you know, like we saw Baylor kind of regress from a team that always won the close, you know, coin flip games to a team that didn't last year. And that was, you know, mostly the function of them falling off a cliff. And I think TCU could be in the same league. This isn't Alabama. This isn't Georgia. This isn't Ohio State. The margins are very, very small for everybody else in college football. And when you remove a few playmakers, when you win a bunch of coin flip games the year before, odds are you're going to take a big step back. I think the question for TCU is just how big of a step back. Does it go to 9 games? Does it go to 7 games? Does it go to flirting with not even being 500? And as a fan and as a program, I think it's important to go, what are our expectations? What are the realistic avenues for our success? Is it you figure out what that over and under is and judge it based on that, not judging it based on 2022, because it's going to take Sonny a couple of years to kind of get that pool of talent back to where it was.
I was going to say too, it kind of has a Baylor-esque type feel, because back in 2021, when Baylor had, you know, superstar staples like Jalen Petrie and Terrell Bernard, you know, we saw them kind of take a step back that next year because they didn't have that kind of leadership and that's those staples that held the program together. I kind of feel like TCU might be kind of in that same spot with without Max Duggan, without Quentin Johnson and Kendra Miller, but it just kind of feels kind of 2022 Baylor-esque to me a little bit.
Right. To start the year, I definitely agree with that, where it's like you make some pretty big decisions as far as your roster is concerned. And, you know, their goal is to obviously avoid what we're talking about with Baylor, right? But they're in a similar situation.
It just feels like, right. It feels like they could be in the same situation.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we all underestimated how big of a factor those guys for Baylor played heading into last year. And we were like, oh, this should be a team that should be pretty solid, right? And obviously they were solid, but I think there were some missing things, obviously missing playmakers and missing leaders in the locker room. So yeah, I think TCU and Sonny Dykes are very wary of that happening, right? You don't just lose a Max Duggan, right? People, again, heading into last year, nobody had thought of Max Duggan as that type of leadership guy, but it was clear that he was a guy they rallied around, they believed in. And so when you lose that kind of voice in the locker room, I definitely think that matters a lot. So with that being said,
and listen, before we move on, listen to I hate being the schedule guy in March, but the last
I was gonna say that, because this is a very backloaded schedule.
Yeah, which is good news, bad news, right? Sure. Like it gives them, you know, a runway into the year where maybe they're playing lesser competition to figure all of those pieces out. What is JoJo Earl? Sure. What is Chandler Morris? What are the new leaders on the defensive side? On the flip side, though, this can look very Sonny Dykes SMU-y, right? Where it's like 6-2, 7-1, and then all of a sudden it's like 7-5, you know, because it is at Kansas State, at Texas Tech, versus Texas, versus Baylor, at Oklahoma. Like, yeah, that is as tough as you can get. Like, and it's just a one-year thing, right? Because Oklahoma and Texas are gone. Like, that's about as tough as a Big 12 gauntlet's ever been at the end of a year.
Well, and like, I mean, along that line, like, sure, yeah, it's the last year you play Texas and Oklahoma, but like, you want to get your butt kicked by him in the last year, right? You want to be able to get at least, you know, one win, maybe obviously an upset or two, and to get two wins, you want to be able to beat them in their last time playing those teams. So, yeah, I don't know, that kind of amps the pressure up, especially the last time Texas is going to be in Fort Worth. Like, yeah, you want to beat them. So, yeah, that's
when is their bye week too? Is it later on in the year?
It looks
right after Kansas State.
Yeah, it's Kansas State, because they got a midweek, midweek.
I think it's
Thursday.
Like eight weeks, a break, and then four weeks. Because they moved, it was going to be the same as it was last year, but they moved that Houston game in the Big 12 up to week three. So yeah, it's kind of like two non-conference games, Houston, a non-conference game. It's kind of like a weird deal there. But Sonny and at TCU did not want to have that early of a bye week again because of how hard it is to get to close. And so, well,
especially with this schedule too. Yeah. Right.
That is the good thing of this schedule, is they get Kansas State, then they get a bye, then they get that last month of the year.
All right, Craven, holding your head over water, do you pick TCU or Baylor have a better chance to win the Big 12?
TCU, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think I know more about what TCU is, honestly, as crazy as that may sound. Like, I don't know who the weapons are for TCU's recruited better. They got better transfers. I think they had a more talented roster last year with guys that are coming back. I mean, TCU's got a guy like Jordan Hudson at wide receiver waiting in the wings. I don't know if Baylor has a guy like that. And so I think there's still, you know, the secondary, I believe, is better at TCU. The linebacker core is going to be really good at TCU. I just think that there's more sure things at TCU, and the feel-good vibe is better in TCU. They're just coming off a runner-up national championship, 12-0 regular season. The belief is there. The team for Baylor's coming off a 6-7 you know, 6-7 season. It's just a little bit different. There's more proven in Baylor than there is TCU. I think they finish around the same record. I think they're both 7-8-9 win teams. But I think if I had to pick one, it would be TCU. I think the team next is the team I would pick as a dark horse in-state Big 12 contender.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of prove it years, I don't know if it's a prove it year, but they're going to want to prove it. Texas Tech. I mean, you thought last year we were high on Joey McGuire and the Red Raiders. I don't think we were high on the hire. We were obviously very cautiously optimistic about the season. The season ended up better than we thought. And we always, even if when they made the hire heading into this time last year, heading into the season, we were like, not this year, next year, 2023. Let's start talking Texas Tech. I mean, they're in position to really make something big here. Now, this is obviously projection, but the pieces are there. The environment's there. The landscape is there. You know, let's keep with the quarterback discussion first. Obviously, they have a decision to make with Tyler Shuck or Baron Morton. Something tells me, as innovative as Joey McGuire and Tech were last year on fourth, you know, not punting, being very aggressive on fourth downs and how forward thinking they were, something tells me Joey McGuire's old football coach brain will want the senior veteran quarterback to be the starter in Tyler Shuck. That's just me. That's me speculating. That's not me reporting anything. But when he was healthy, he came back in and they seemed, and Joey McGuire was very comfortable with him as a starting quarterback. I think that's just his cliched ball coach coming back into him saying, yeah, we want the senior, right? Back to his high school mentality. We want the senior over the sophomore or whatever. So what are your thoughts on Tyler Shuck versus Baron Morton? Obviously, we talked last year about all the quarterbacks they had, the different skill sets they have. I think personally for me, Tyler Shuck gives them the blend of everything. Whether or not his ceiling is as high as a Baron Morton, I don't know, but I feel like the floor he gives you is maybe higher.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much age comes into it or how much just what they did. I mean, Tyler Shuck's 4-0 when he started under Joey McGuire. You know, Baron Morton has a live arm, maybe has a, you know, a higher upside as a passer, can throw more routes on the passing tree. But I don't think Shuck's that far behind. You know, he's an Oregon transfer who had a lot of talent. A lot of people thought it was going to be like an NFL draft pick after 1 year under Matt Wells with Texas Tech. And it just hasn't worked out that way because, you know, he's had two collarbone injuries that have cost him 2/3 of last year and basically the whole season the year before. So I think if you're Texas Tech, both of those guys are going to play because it's hard to go, well, you've played 4 games or 6 games in 2 years and then you're going to play a full season. I think it's pretty safe to say as a Tech staff, you can go to Baron Morton and go, even if you don't win this job, you're going to be starting a few games this year at least. And when you get that opportunity, you can take it and maybe never look back. The reason I'm high on Texas Tech is one, the coaching staff, they haven't figured it out behind the scenes, right? Like they have a program rowing in the right direction in a way that you just rarely see by year two. And I'm not just talking on the field, like just look at the facilities and the amount of money that they've raised to do NIL, just how much has changed in 12 months. Like when he got the job to where it is now, like the machine is rolling.
It's absurd. Lubbock,
it's been remarkable. Right. And so, you know, we always knew McGuire was that guy. It was about how could he get the roster turned over and figured out. Well, it turns out that roster is a little bit more talented than maybe we all thought it was. And so he hasn't had to go to the portal as much. I think the offensive line is going to be better this year because Cole Spencer is going to play. The interior of the defensive line may be the best in the Big 12. Like, when has you ever been able to say that about Texas Tech and the history of Red Raider football? And so, you know, they have some question marks. What are they going to do at left tackle? They got to replace linebackers. I think the big one may be Tyree Wilson. How do they figure that out, right? You're not going to replace a top 10 draft pick with somebody who's in Lubbock, Texas. It's just not going to happen. And so they're going to have to figure that part out. But I think in a Big 12 that is wide open, where Kansas State, who also lost people and is going to have to figure that out, and Texas, who, I mean, you can count on them at your own peril, right, over the last 15 years. Texas Tech's kind of quietly right in that mix. I think that they kind of are like the Kansas State of last year, where maybe they don't win the regular season title, but if they can sneak into that title game, I wouldn't want to play them. And so that's a good spot to be if you're Texas Tech. The fact that we're even having these conversations is proof positive that that was the correct way to go when they hired McGuire from Baylor.
Yeah, you mentioned Tyree Wilson, and obviously you can't – when he left, when he was out this year, that was like the biggest – the biggest blow to their season, I think, was just like teams didn't have to worry about scheming away from one side of the ball, basically. I wonder if this year, again, not saying they replace him, but with the overall talent coming back, right? You did your interior defensive lineman rankings. And just overall, could they be better on the defensive line, right? I think obviously you're missing that game breaker, but I'm talking about on the two deep overall. Last year, you had success if you were able to scheme away from Tyree Wilson. I'm wondering if the difference this year is, well, there's no necessarily weak spot on this defense, right? And so you have a Jalen Hutchings kind of being that kind of game potential game breaker this year. You have a Tony Bradford, right, as well, kind of being that game breaker. And I'm wondering if that's kind of the next step this team takes is like, okay, well, you can't really scheme away from one player because we got actually, you know, a couple guys, four or five deep on that, on the defensive line, that we can just continue to rotate and be pretty okay, no matter who's in the game. So I'm wondering if that's kind of the next step this takes, because like you mentioned, Tyree Wilson's not a plug and play guy. He's probably going to be the second defensive lineman off the board in the draft. And so that kind of talent you can't just replace, but I wonder by committee if they are just kind of overall more deep this year.
I think the defensive line is going to be good. I mean, Tim DeRuiter, every stop he's ever had, defensive line's been pretty solid. So I think defensive line is going to be pretty. I like what they are in the secondary. Malik Dunlap, one of the best corners in the state. You know, Dadrian Taylor Demerson's really good. Tyler Owens has always had a lot of athletic ability. For me, it's linebacker. You know, they lose Creshawn Merriweather. How do they replace, you know, 100 plus tacklers? You know, like that guy has been their leading tackler the last few years. Who steps up there? Is it Jacob Rodriguez? Who's that going to be? And so for me, it's the second level of the defense that I'm most concerned about. And I mean, having Tyree Wilson makes everybody look better. And so Jalen Hutchins had a great year. Tony Bradford had a great year. They're going to see more double teams this year than they ever saw last year when Tyree Wilson was on the field. And they're going to have to figure that out. Who's going to be that guy who takes the double teams, and who's going to be the other players that step up around them? DeRuiter's always had really good edge rushers, going back to like Von Miller in those days. He's going to manufacture pass rushing. But as you mentioned, you don't plug and play a guy who is a top two draft pick in the NFL. Texas Tech just simply doesn't recruit that way yet. Like you're not, like we talked about, you're not Alabama, you're not Georgia. Only so many places can do that. There's going to be a step back production wise on the edge. As you pointed out, maybe those other players can pick up the slack.
Yeah. Let's get to the other side of the trenches, because that's arguably might be the make or break for this season, in my opinion. The offensive line we mentioned last year was very awful, and that's why they stuck with Donovan Smith for as long as they did. You know, somebody who can just run and be and handle the pressure. Obviously, in some situations, it paid off because he was able to avoid pressure and make plays, and you know, he kind of flashes talents that way. He's a bigger body; he can take the hits. Tyler Shuck, we mentioned, very injury prone throughout his career. Whether he's injury prone or just bad luck with injury, regardless, you don't want him getting hit. Baron Morton, young player as well, obviously dealt with an injury last year. You don't want him getting hit. You pick up a Cole Spencer who you get back from injury, who was supposed to be a big player for this team, coming in from Western Kentucky, where he played, of course, with under Zach Kittley. You know, what are your expectations for this offensive line? Because Cole Spencer, probably the best offensive lineman coming in, but he's coming off an injury. Is he going to be he's having to adjust on the fly to the Big 12, right? He didn't get that chance last year to really come in and face against these type of defensive linemen or pass rushers, things like that. So, but instantly he becomes probably your most talented offensive lineman. You know, what are you expecting from this team that you know, has the talented running back, has playmakers on the outside, has quarterbacks? That front five, though, is going to be a real, real issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think a distinction is, like, they are pretty good in the interior. Dennis Wilburn at center is pretty good. Landon Peterson at right guard was pretty good. You slide Cole Spencer, I would assume, at the left guard position. And now you're guard to guard, you know, you're there. Maybe not the best in the Big 12 or, you know, Texas or Oklahoma in terms of overall talent. But that's a solid guard to guard. You can win with that in the Big 12. It comes down to the outside. Right, Monroe Mills, solid at right tackle. Caleb Rogers struggled at left tackle, and so they're going to have to figure that out. Whether that's moving him over to right tackle and then figure out a left tackle spot, or maybe he takes a step forward in year two as a left tackle because he was new to that side. last year, but can a Ty Buchanan, who was a transfer and a big time recruit, can he take a next step up, right? Can a Matt Keeler, also a transfer, take a step up? Can any of those guys that they're bringing in this year slide and play in there? But if they can't figure out the tackle spot, that means you got to keep a tight end in or running back in, and that limits what Kittley's trying to do. I think they're going to be good running the football with guys like Taj Brooks, Cameron Valdez. And so, you know, if they can figure out the edge of the offensive line, I think Texas Tech's offense is going to be one of the better ones in the nation.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, like you mentioned, they have the playmakers, and they have the kind of the pieces there. Obviously last year in practice wasn't as great, but it kind of feels like one of the recipes for success, and they really got to figure out how it just kind of all works together. So yeah, I mean, we've mentioned Texas, and we've mentioned how this won't be the last time that we're going to be high on Texas. This is not gonna be the last time we're gonna be high on Texas Tech. This offseason is gonna be pretty big for both of those programs. And we'll see kind of the news coming out of spring, you know, obviously transfer portal, things like that, who emerges from spring as somebody that's going to play into our expectations as well. But I know Craven's going to have an interesting time putting together his previews and kind of predictions for both of those teams in particular.
Especially when the summer transfer opens up on June 1st and you can just like go sign any guys, or guys can leave. And that's the other part of college football too, is like these spring practices become places where you not only find question marks, but you can potentially go find some answers. Like it used to be like, crap, we don't have a left tackle. What in the world are we going to do? But now it can be, oh crap, we don't have a left tackle. Well, we can go sign one in the portal, especially a place like Texas Tech where you're offering NIL money and you have some incentives to go there. And so, you know, I think that's the cool part. Maybe some people get frustrated by it, but to me, that's one of the cool parts of football nowadays, is you can go address some of those holes in ways that you couldn't. And I think that's why we're seeing some of the best football we've ever seen played, is because teams are deeper and better than they've ever been, because they can go use essentially what is free agency in the summer.
Right. No, 100%. I agree with that. That's going to be, hopefully for you, not too frustrating. Hopefully it's more on the positive side, where it's like, hey, look, they got somebody, instead of, hey, look, you got to erase this section again. All right, let's look at the conference as a whole now, because this is obviously, for multiple reasons, a huge year. Last year of Texas and Oklahoma, kind of the first year of kind of figuring out who the next crop of teams are going to be, kind of in their absence. Houston obviously comes into the picture. You know, is this as simple as Texas, Oklahoma, and then the Pac? Is it back to kind of, you know, is it kind of a reverse of what we've seen in the years past, where, you know, obviously instead of Oklahoma being at the top, it's Texas, but, or do you see it playing out differently?
I think Kansas State can't be forgotten, you know, defending champions. You know, Chris Klieman seems to win every single place he goes. And I think that there's something to be said about that. You know, obviously Texas and Oklahoma are going to be the most talented rosters. I believe Texas is poised to compete in a way that they haven't in a while, just because they're so experienced. That offensive line is good. They're good at linebacker. They're good in the secondary. So I think, to me, they're going to be the betting favorite once June, July comes around and the more reputable places have real lines. I would imagine Texas is right there. Oklahoma, sure, Number two, Kansas State number three. But Kansas State was like fifth or sixth last year, and they go and they win the Big 12. TCU was picked like seventh, and they go undefeated. The year before, Baylor goes from two wins to a Big 12 championship game. So I feel like the Big 12 more than ever is wide open. And so I will take the field if it's Texas, Oklahoma in the field, just because of the recent history of the Big 12 being so wacky and wild that the favorites don't win anymore. It feels like the favorites aren't the favorites anymore. I think Kansas State would be my favorite, but I do think Texas is right there.
Yeah. No, I think I agree with that. I think that's probably how I look at things as well. My one... Yeah, I mean, I guess Texas Tech would be my own like dark horse kind of thing right there. But like you mentioned, I think Kansas State's probably the safer bet. Obviously, they have some big pieces to replace with Deuce Vaughn and whatever the situation they have at quarterback. But even like you said, like Chris Klieman's figured out how to make things work anyway. Regardless, their defense is going to be good. They have an identity on offense, so they're almost guaranteed to be some type of player. Now with this being the last year of Texas and Oklahoma, you know, I guess this is more of a question about the future of the Big 12, but regardless, this is still something that we're going to have to keep track of as a Texas podcast. you know, now that the SEC theoretically becomes even more the toughest conference in the country next year, in 2024, I mean, does the Big 12, like, is it possible right now for the Big 12 to equate themselves or even surpass the Big 10? Or is it just right now the SEC, the Big 10, and then the, you know, kind of the wasteland Mad Max frenzy of everybody else?
Yeah, it feels like the term Power Five is outdated now that the four-team invitational is out of there.
Right.
It feels like a Power Two and then everyone else. I think Richard Johnson said that on Twitter the other day. And it feels pretty true to me. Like the SEC and the Big Ten are far and away better than everybody, especially when USC, UCLA joined the Big Ten. It feels like they just have, you know, five or six programs that are just so good you can't deny their place as the second best conference in college football. But I think the Big 12 right now is the third best football conference in America. And starting in 2024, even without Texas and Oklahoma, they are going to be the third best conference in America. And so I don't know how much changes for them. And the good news for the Big 12 and for all of us as college football fans is the playoff is expanding in a way that doesn't shut them out. If it would have stayed at four,
that's true,
it could have been SEC versus Big 10 every single year. Best two teams in the SEC, best two teams in the Big Ten. Perception carries all, and they just play it out and just becomes kind of a you know, European championship for Big Ten SEC football. The expansion allows the Big 12 champion to get in every year. And if that Big 12 champion starts doing really well, it probably allows two teams to get in there every single year. And so for me, I think the Big 12 is poised to be as good or as prevalent as ever. Sure, it won't have Texas. It won't have Oklahoma. But they're keeping $100 million of rights in there. They're bringing in three or four really good football programs with high upsides. And so I think they're positioned as any to be relevant in college football beyond, you know, the major two that are going to suck up all the air from CBS, ESPN, Fox.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point, because obviously you're wondering, like, if the Big 12 chooses to expand. Right now, it doesn't look like there's any obvious candidates. Right now, obviously, the Pac-12 is trying to figure out what their candidates are. Even if, I think, as is, they're at worst the third. Because even if the Pac-12 tries to get SMU and San Diego State or whatever, that's not, like, the ceiling of those programs aren't the ceiling of what Houston could be. They're not the ceiling of what UCF, Cincinnati could be, things like that. And so I think at worst, even if the Big 12 stays put, you're going to be third, right? And depending on what happens with the Big 10, I think they're probably stuck at number two right now. Who knows? But, you know, things fluctuate. It could be, in past years, it's sometimes been just Ohio State and everybody else in the Big 10. Obviously, Michigan's been up there now the past couple of years. And so it could continue to fluctuate like that. And maybe the Big 12 has a rise in there if Texas Tech gets its money right or whatever. Who knows? But I think at worst, they're probably sitting at three. But like you mentioned, with the expansion coming up, it's almost, I don't want to say irrelevant, but it does become less of an issue when it comes to, you know, how prominent you are in the national scene. When you have a guaranteed spot, you potentially have an at-large bid if you can get your way in there as well. You potentially could have two-ish spots. Who knows? But yeah, good.
Because of last year, it was already at 12.
Sure, right.
TCU and Kansas State are in.
Right, yeah.
You know, and that's as good as it's ever been for the Big 12, right? I mean, they never got two teams in. It was a struggle to get one in, and every time they would, people laugh, you know? And so I think Big 12 is as positioned to be important in college football as it's ever been, despite losing its two, quote-unquote, bell cows and moneymakers at the top. And I think that just shows the landscape of college football and how it's changing it, and maybe we're getting back to the time where it was a little bit more spread out. It wasn't so top-heavy of a sport.
Sure. No, I agree with that. Let's see. I'm trying to think. That might be all we got. Well, let's go with favorites. What do you got?
I think I'm taking Kansas State with Texas being number two. That's my mid-March pick with plenty of time, plenty of wiggle room to change. I haven't placed any bets, so I can still change.
I was going
to
say, how many times is that going to change within the next couple months?
Right. As I'm doing the magazine, I start changing things. Like you start getting into one team a little too much. And you start changing your opinion about it.
Guessing yourself.
I will go 6 weeks of tormenting myself before that thing comes out.
I think in my March pick, I think I'm leaning Texas right now. But who knows, after spring, we might get all the doomsayers saying, actually, Arch Manning is awful and Quinn Ewers is worse than he was last year. And I was like, well, okay, never mind then. All of that's gone. So we'll see. I love the spring storylines coming out, though. Oh, one more. Here's one on the list that I didn't get to. Brett Yormark. Let's talk about him a little bit really quick. How are you grading the year one of the young, hipper, cooler Big 12 that does Bape sponsorships and has concerts at halftime or whatever they do?
Some of it's a little hokey. Some of it is very hokey. Some of it is very like, oh yeah, he did work for Rock Nation and for like professional sports leagues that do like the dumbest things in between commercial breaks.
Didn't they have
a
hip-hop track to their women's playlist, like tournament or whatever?
For March Madness or whatever. And it's about as bad as you would think that it is. But I'd still give him an A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He beat everybody to the punch, or at least he beat the Pac-12 to the punch on TV market deals. And kind of like in recruiting, he kind of took the open scholarship, and now the Pac-12 is the one scrambling to be streamed and what's going to happen there. I think the Big 12 is in the same spot if they wait, you know, so good on him for getting out in front of it. It does feel like perception wise, it is complete. This time last year, we were wondering if the Big 12 was even going to exist in the way that it exists.
That's a good
We thought it was going to fold into the Pac-12, and now we've all changed our mind into, is the Pac-12 going to fold into the Big 12, right? And so to me, that's all about Brett Yormark and what he's done. He's been forward-thinking. He's been aggressive. He's been first to the punch. And in any good fight, you don't wait to get punched in the face. You punch first, and he's done that really well. I'd give him an A. I think the Big 12, as I said earlier, I think they're as positioned to be good in the makeup of college football as they've ever been. And then I don't know if you saw the thing today, but they're going to do like a Big 12 pro day, you know, where instead of like having it all these different colleges and stuff like that. And I'm sure Texas, like Bijan Robinson would still have his own pro day, right?
Sure.
But like
sure.
For everybody else and those guys, have it all together, have all the scouts there instead of having 5 scouts here, 20 scouts there, 10, let's get it all together. Right? It's that kind of stuff. It's like, let's just make our own combine. Screw who gets invited and who doesn't get invited. If we have everybody in the same spot, all 32 teams are going to be represented. It's stuff. It's the outside of the box thinking brought to an old school sport that impresses me. This is a very country club, good old boy sport that hasn't changed for better or worse for a long time. They were resistant of change. And Brett Yormark has come in and been the opposite of that. And that's refreshing. And I think it's already been rewarding.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I mean, for all the hokiness that, you know, the young hipper stuff gets, one, that gets people talking about the Big 12, first of all. So, like, even if it's hokey, even if it's weird, you're still pumping out Big 12 content for them, right? Hey, check how bad this track is. Well, cool, you just blasted a link to the Big 12's YouTube page all over the place. But in addition to that, yeah, I think the swiftness in how he acted in, one, getting everybody to – because Houston being in the Big 12 is a massive deal, right? That was a thing that, like, 10 years ago was not going to happen, right? And then he kind of got everybody on the same track saying, hey, look, we need them or we go under. And he got everybody kind of in rank and file. Boom, here comes Houston. And then who's the other markets? Okay, Ohio. Let's get Cincinnati. Let's get, you know, UCF, things like that, BYU. And so, yeah, it makes sense that or those moves made sense, but it seemed like they were always, like, kind of pipe dreams or like things that people, not everybody wanted necessarily. And so it was kind of unknown if they would happen. He kind of got it to happen. So I think that's something that also goes in his favor. So yeah, I mean, so far so good as far as his tenure is concerned. Right now they're in a position of where, I mean, I can't, there's no obvious next domino for realignment, right? There's no next like, oh, so-and-so is going to the SEC next. We're like, there's no, all those moves have happened. And they're still afloat, and they're probably more stable now that they don't have to worry about Texas and Oklahoma leaving. They're probably more stable than they have been in the past. So, yeah, I think I agree. From going from a decade of wondering where they are, the pecking order, to stability, to participation in the national championship, now they're kind of stable, and they kind of have answers more or less to all those questions, which are, we're going to be fine, we're going to be able to compete, and we know who our teams are. So, yeah, definitely a successful year one for me too. That'll do it for us. We did our little spring preview. Now that, you know, next week spring break will be more or less over, and so these teams will be getting back to camp, back in the swing of things. Some teams will, I don't know, has everybody started yet, or is there still
A lot of them start, you know, at Baylor, TCU, A&M, right. A lot of them start. So there's two schools of thoughts here. You know, some coaches like to start a week or two before spring break and then give spring break as kind of a buffer Sure. And then finish it off and spread out the spring practices. Some just like to get them back from spring break, get the last party in out for all the players and just get them back on Monday and start it from there. I always find it interesting, you know, how coaches or why coaches do that kind of stuff.
Sure. No, I think I agree with that. That's not a bad. I think I agree personally with the starting after, you know, just like, hey, get it all out. But right. Then again, some I feel like some players may overdo it and be like, cool, that means I can like go completely
Jeff Traylor at UTSA likes to start it a week before, 2 weeks before spring break. That way your last hurrah isn't spring break.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, like you're already beat up, you're already sore, you're already stiff. Maybe spring break is spent kind of recovering and hanging out,
right? Being a little loose
because your body needs the break. Whereas if you don't start until March 20th, well, boy, you got to get out there and go in spring break because you're going to be busy for the next 6 weeks. And so, you know, I think as a coach, I would do it that way. As a player, sure. I'd want it done the other way. I'd want to be not sore on spring break personally.
That's a fun little off-season piece too, if you think about it. That'd be interesting to kind of go around and see the philosophies of each coach and, you know, kind of what their mindset is at. And
then kind of, you probably talk to some players. Hey, what'd you do? Like, were you chilling? Or were you going
to Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, y'all remember being 20 for Mallory. It was like last week, you know, you can recover a lot quicker. So I think, you know, these coaches start making decisions and they're thinking about themselves. Like Traylor's like, well, if I started spring practice, I wouldn't do anything for spring break because I'd be being sore. But he's 50 plus years old. Like these guys are 20. They're partying, man. They're having a good time.
Frank Harris can go out the night of a two-a-day. Yeah. Like he can probably go out that night.
Yeah, they're good. They're energizer bunnies. That's why they are the elite of the elite. The rest of us are the ones that are like, man, I would need to sit in a cold bath for 2 days.
Right. That's my vacation. Yeah. All right. With that being said, we have interviewed 12 of the 13 FBS head coaches on this show. Jimbo Fisher, give us a call or give Jay Arnold or Mike Craven a call to go on Aggie War Pod. With that being a reminder as well.
We'll share the audio.
Yeah, exactly. With that being said, of course, subscribe. Republic of Football on the Apple and Spotify feeds. Subscribe to all of our podcasts on the podcast network. Aggie War Pod, of course, and Eyes of Texas are the brand new ones that we launched. But, of course, go check out every single one. You will see them weekly starting this week popping up here. And with that being said, unfortunately, Rutgers lost their play-in game. I was going to say, go Rutgers. Congratulations on making the tournament. But
the tournament. They were in the NIT.
That's right. And then they lost the NIT game. They hosted the NIT and they lost. So anyway, go Rutgers. Congrats on hosting the NIT. And that'll do it for us.